Have you ever looked into the night sky and wondered, are we alone? We've learned so much about the world and our universe, and yet we realize there are so many mysteries yet unsolved. If you are interested in the unexplained and mysterious in our world, then join us in The Night Search, a forum for discussion and exploration of the world just beyond our reach. And now, your host for Night Search, Eddie Middleton.
Welcome to our show here on July the 1st, 2014, as usual, and more so than usual, actually, tonight we'll be cranking out information on the airwaves to make your hair raise. I'm interviewing Joe Fetch, who's been a frequent guest on our show, and Mr. Fetch definitely has some information that I consider quite vexing. So, Joe, thanks for being on again, and we'll just start at a good point, just so I can ask you, how did you get intrigued with this 411, missing 411?
Oh, you know, eventually everything comes through the grapevine, you know what I mean? So, you know, especially with the Internet nowadays, anything, any major investigation, unless it's completely sealed tight like the Gorman Ranch was for several years, nobody knew anything about what was happening out there. But eventually, you know, word leaks out and it starts to make its rounds and things like this. I was already familiar with Pilotti's work in Bigfoot research. And in fact, I think his site was probably the first Bigfoot website I ever ran across years ago. And it really impressed me because he includes all reliable data, regardless of people's opinions or anything of the like. And, you know, very few people do that. And eventually, maybe 2 years ago or so, I had started to hear about the national park situation. Of course, vanishing things and appearing things and missing people and things like this run the whole gambit. If you're in paranormal research to any degree, no matter what field or what books you're reading, eventually you're going to read little bits and pieces here and there about strange disappearances. In the field of Bigfoot research in the 50s, there was a world-renowned skier named Carter that vanished off the side of a mountain, and you find that in many Bigfoot books. And you know, I don't know why people relate it to Bigfoot, I guess because it's a Bigfoot area. And the guy's tracks led the searchers to believe that he was skiing at a very erratic neck-breaking rate and just making absolutely insane jumps and turns and things like this. And so the people that were searching for him made the presumption that he must have been being pursued by something. It looked like he was fleeing something skiing at, you know, a guy of his caliber in such a ridiculous pattern. Because, you know, yeah. Anybody that knows anything about skiing, you can get killed really easy, very quickly, you know, if you don't exercise caution and
absolutely,
you know,
yes.
So the whole idea of people just disappearing pops up from time to time in paranormal research in general, and then there's the field of, you know, the Bermuda Triangle caliber of things missing, large amounts of people, huge equipment, things like this vanishing off the face of the earth. So the idea is always stuck in my mind, and the idea has always intrigued me. And I've always, for years, I've encouraged other researchers, you know, that if you're looking for a specific field to devote yourself to, vanishing things and vanishing people is a field that I've always felt, you know, no one ever specialized in. No one did this full time. They just ran across bits and pieces. So as soon as I heard about David Pilotti's investigations and him discovering a pattern within the national parks, it just thrilled me to no end that a reliable researcher, you know, of a high degree of integrity and professionalism was shifting into that direction. Mm. You know, and I thought, well, it'd be great if he did that full time, or it'd be great if what he does in it inspires someone else to specialize in that field. Because like with animal and human mutilations, there are many fields that are of vital importance for us to be examining. People die. People end up missing. Lives are destroyed. by these things. There was a town in, I think, Alabama in the 70s that overnight no one heard or saw anything, and every cat and every dog in this entire town vanished.
Really? Every cat and dog?
Every one of them. 16 miles away in two different locations, there were cattle mutilations going on the same night.
Oh, my God.
You know? And things like this just stun me, because it doesn't stun me that things like this happen. What stuns me is that people aren't outraged to the point to where, you know, let's cut the bull with this government denial crap. This needs to be addressed. This is very important, because if it can happen to a dog or a cat, rest assured it can happen to people.
Well,
and,
what about in San Antonio, Texas, when those cats were found that had been cut in half?
Happens all over the world. I've been tracking that for years, and there's patterns in that that are strikingly unique. One of the things that I believe will ultimately lead to another level of understanding the mutilation phenomenon is I noticed right off that, okay, every abduction that takes place and every mutilation that takes place is indications that some force or some technology, whatever you want to identify it with, is utilized to subdue a person, almost in a hypnotic way. If you talk to abductees, you know, they claim that they experience a paralysis. Their brain is working, they're thinking, but they can't move or control their bodies, and their bodies are often controlled by the entities themselves. Same thing with cows. You know, when a 600-pound bull to a 900-pound bull gets abducted, if you've ever had anything to do with a bull, you know right off, it's ridiculous to think that you can just grab this animal. They will kill you in a heartbeat, man. They're huge. And whatever is mutilating these bulls, there's no sign that there was a fight. You know what I mean? No bruising on the animal where it's being restrained. You know, in some cases there have been indication of restraints and straps and things. But initially, however that animal is obtained, something's done to it.
Uh-huh.
Something is done to it, similar to what's done with humans, I think, when they're abducted. Well, when cats are abducted and mutilated, whatever technology they're using doesn't work on them. Every case I've examined, they fight furiously. Yet not one time have I seen a necropsy that preserved their heads, their paws. Things that might contain microscopic particles of whatever it was they were fending off or fighting. But there's a whole level of mutilation elements and details about cat mutilations that are entirely different from all the other mutilations that we've seen. You know, one of those things is the whole body's never returned. You know, the body in bulk is never returned. There's always one-third of the animal missing, and if there's one-third missing, it's going to be the center portion, front part, back part, and then the center. That center portion is going to be missing. And secondly, if they are in two parts, those are pretty much the only two patterns, if they are in two parts, usually the rear is missing, you know. But there's a bunch of different curious elements about it. When a cat is mutilated and its bulk body has been cut into three sections, the center section is always the piece that's taken, and when the animal is placed back, the front and back part are put together so that when the owner walks up to the animal's body, at first they don't even realize he's been mutilated. They just think he's dead. It isn't until they try to move the animal that they realize the animal's in two parts and there's a midsection missing. But that's one of the patterns that strikes me as very curious about the missing 411 cases that Pilates works with, is often the victims, whether they're living or dead, whether it's evidence like a piece of clothing or whatever, there are parts of the body, parts of the clothing, and living survivors that appear, they show every appearance that something intelligent has placed them in the path of someone to find them specifically. Something of an intelligence does this. It will place a shoe right out in the open years after a person's been abducted, you know. And the parts that are found like that, sometimes they show absolutely no sign of being weathered at all. So, you know, and like with the Adadeo case, this little boy that turned up missing several years later, they found a tooth and they found a shoe. Both of them were completely immaculate. The tooth was on top of a log. The shoe was on top of a boulder. Neither one of them had any dust or dirt on them. There's no way in hell that these things were sitting out in the woods for years.
No.
No way.
No.
Not possible. These things were somewhere else and somewhere where they were protected from any debris or any aging, really. And the same is true with the cat mutilations. When a cat is mutilated, over 90% of the time, that animal is brought back where it came from and placed distinctively in the pathway of its owners. It is put somewhere where the person that was associated with the animal can't help but run across it.
Uh-huh.
It's like whatever is doing it for whatever reason, because we can't apply human logic to this, you know what I mean? We're dealing with something completely foreign. So we can't be anthropomorphic about it. We can't presume that these things are motivated or think in any way, shape, or form the same way we do. Now, if a person did that, if a person kidnapped your cat, murdered it, butchered it up, and then brought it back and sat it on your doorstep, you would think, this is one sick bastard.
Right,
But we're not dealing with a human here. We're not dealing with anything that we can even remotely associate with what we are. So we can't be too quick to rush about motivations and things like this, because this is, you know, this is the cutting edge of paranormal research. You know what I mean? This is the edge of oblivion, really. You know what I mean? And how we perceive our reality. But these whatever abducts cats tends to bring the animal straight back home and place it in a manner as if it wants or needs the human associated with the animal. It needs that person to know for whatever purpose or reason. It's a very curious characteristic to these mutilations. And when dogs are mutilated, people, cattle, things like this, horses, this never happens. Very rarely does a mutilated animal turn up right on the doorstep of its owner or whoever it's associated with. So I do believe there are key elements in all of these phenomena, no matter what phenomenon you're talking about. There are key elements that the overall community, because they're all mostly kind of ego and entertainment-based mentalities, they're looking at things on the surface. Most of these people are not really qualified researchers or investigators, you know what I mean, as anybody in this business would know. Most of them are common citizens that really don't know what the hell they're doing, but they sure do like to talk about it a lot, and they loathe educating themselves, and they loathe admitting insufficient training, you know what I mean? And one thing I learned early, years ago, from Ivan Sanderson, I learned from his books, reading his wildlife books, his jungle exploration books, that you have to train your brain how to process things. You can't just look at UFO photos and Bigfoot footprints and say, hey, what do you think of this? That's not how you're supposed to be conducting research. You have to retrain your brain how to process data in more of a sterilized way, more of a mechanized way. You know what I mean? Sanderson's advice. Yes?
Eddie, I don't know about you, but do you hear a wearing blender in the background?
I don't know. Maybe
I hear something, and it sounds like they're grinding up ice.
Do you still hear it?
Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering if anybody else...
I faintly hear what you're talking about. It's a little odd.
I know, it is. It's very loud on my end. I don't know what it is.
I don't know what it is, but we just go on, and I'm not grinding any ice here on my end.
Oh, okay. I just wondered. It was really noisy, and you wonder if it's if they're not aware of it or what. But
me, that's the exciting thing about Pilates research is it's finally forcing the hand of the community to recognize, and not just the community, the public in general, to recognize that we live in an environment that is mostly unavailable to our detection. Most of what surrounds you right now, 80% of it is not even visible to you.
Right.
So imagine that. Imagine that. You are in an environment, 80% of all things around you, you cannot even see. And there's a same percentage that exists with infrasonic frequency ranges. There are ranges of sound that we can hear that, you know, and a wealth of sound that we can't hear. And animals can. Animals can clearly hear because they have a broader range than we do. Same thing with their sight. They have a much broader visual range. And I believe that animals can detect a lot of these invisible unknowns that coexist with us every day. And they know about us, but we don't know about them. We keep running back into the shadows of superstition and ignorance. You know what I mean? And it prevents us from moving forward and actually integrating or understanding what these things are and what's our role. What's our role in nature? Because if they're here and we're here, that's nature's design.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Joe, these disappearances in the parks, tell our listening audience the kind of cases that has caught Pilates' attention that could not be explained by some kind of mundane, you know, way, like serial killers or whatever.
Or got lost or something, yeah.
There's nothing remotely logical that can attach these things to commonplace or mundane explanations. And that's the beauty of what David Pilates is doing right now. And Eddie, you've known me for a good number of years now. You know, it takes quite a bit of an impressive activity for me to emphatically endorse anyone.
Right.
I do truly personally believe 90% of all the researchers out there are, and people aren't going to like it, but they're worthless in my view. If you're not bringing new information, artifacts, data, if you're not contributing to the table of knowledge, then you're just a hobbyist. And that is just a fact that the community, it doesn't encourage the ego. But if their egos aren't encouraged, then they should do better and take it seriously and become professional with it.
Right.
The beauty of Pilates' work and why I endorse it so much is everything is done by the book the way it's supposed to be done. He's got a good, healthy law enforcement background, so he has actual training and actual experience in the field. He knows how to investigate. He knows how to check every possibility, every angle, and all of these cases, none of them are stories. You read a Bigfoot book and you get story after story after story after story. A person has an encounter and this is what they said. These are not stories. These are documents. These are official documents, official investigations, you know what I mean, from the highest level of federal government on down. These facts and these details and these events are determinable facts of reality. This is exactly what was found and what was determined. And what was determined doesn't make any rational sense. And the thing that draws me to leaning towards this being a paranormal phenomenon, what is the one thing that all paranormal phenomena does that classifies it as paranormal?
Defies conventional scientific explanation.
Right.
There you go. There you go. It is impossible by our standards of known physics as we currently understand it. Even if you went into quantum mechanics and exploded your brain in the field of other dimensions, which is an establishable fact now. A lot of people, Bigfoot people, can't stand my ass because I keep talking about this. It's a possibility we have to consider in all realms of paranormal phenomena, beings from other dimensions. And it may anger the Bigfoot people, but they know nothing about UFOs. They know nothing about physics, but they'll still tell me what is and what isn't. And they
that's true.
They don't know what to do with me because it doesn't affect me. You know what I mean? I learned long ago, my training was always, always allow the data to lead you to the facts.
Right.
Don't walk into it presuming. If you're a homicide detective, you walk into a room, there's a dead body, you know what I mean? You don't automatically start making presumptions. everybody that has come in contact with that person is a suspect, period.
Everybody, yeah.
A lot of people don't
know
that. In a forensic homicide investigation, the first thing that the detectives do after securing a scene is they assemble a list of every person that victim knew, everybody they came in contact with, and then they start whittling that list down. Those
mm-hmm.
that can account for their whereabouts during the homicide, they get cut off.
Right.
And you whittle that list down more, you know what I mean? And you just keep going down and down and down. And when you do things under this kind of system, you're bound to contain the perpetrator. It's going to be in that list somewhere.
Well,
very rarely does a person randomly kill another person that they had absolutely no run-in with before. 90% of the time, if you're murdered, chances are you're going to be murdered by somebody that you know.
Right.
Which is
right.
a little disturbing in itself.
Well, you know, something else
yeah.
that attracts my attention is people that don't react normally to a regular situation. You know, like if, let's say you saw, you mentioned seeing a body. Well, if you didn't
uh-huh.
know somebody at all and you walked in there and you just freaked out and screamed and collapsed and everything else, that would be very abnormal behavior if it wasn't somebody you knew.
Well,
and,
it depends. People have different psychologies, and psychology is very complex sometimes, and people
yeah.
have phobias. Chuck
mm-hmm.
and I have tried to train people in cattle mutilation field investigation, and
yeah.
if you're an animal lover, both Chuck and I are just adamant animal lovers, it's hard. But if you're not willing to get really disgusting, because
uh-huh.
you're going to have to deal with some pretty repulsive crap. A dead cow sitting in the sun for 2 days is no fun thing to deal with, especially
oh,
if
no.
you have to move it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but what about
and,
there was a guy that I remember this stuck in my mind. After they had investigated it, they brought in a branch of Green Berets. Now, to me, that's very unusual.
Well,
you know.
All the patterns dictate another fact.
Uh-huh.
Federal authorities know what's happening at minimum. I'm not going to go as far as to say that they know what the cause of it is or the nature of it is,
right.
but they know what it is. Probably enough to be able to apply a name. Right now, there's no name for this phenomenon. There's no name for whatever it is that does this. All we know about it is that it's real. It must be physical to some extent. It's highly intelligent. It predicts the movements of its victims. It predicts the movements of people pursuing those people, searchers, you know, and rescue teams. It hinders search and rescue intentionally. This tells
right.
us that this is a calculating, thinking thing that is picking prey. There's also a pattern of people that are at a disadvantage for one reason or another.
Right.
Young children,
I read that,
people
yeah.
with disabilities, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You know, elderly people. It's highly selective in what its target is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It goes after it and it snags it. But all of these things dictate to us that this is indeed an intelligent, calculating thing. It's not like a force of nature, a natural force of people just vanishing into another dimension. This is something, you know, which would actually be easier to understand because we know that there are other dimensions and that there are labs opening these avenues up right now.
Right.
We are now scientifically able to beam. And I mean this, we can beam matter. We can transmit matter in the form of particle waves. Just like in Star Trek or The Fly, if you ever saw Vincent Price in The Fly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That is a reality now. Granted, it's very mundane, it's very small. They can only do this with little things right now. But we've, you know, MIT experiments have opened the floodgate. They did some experiments a handful of years ago and blasted a piece of metal in a vacuum chamber with a massive dose of photons, and they watched the thing divide. And it didn't become two pieces of metal. what they were viewing was the piece of metal that they put in the chamber, and that same piece of metal as it exists in a parallel dimension. For the first time, people have been able to peer into another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be the new space age if mankind survives long enough. You know what I mean? Without question, all space exploration is going to be virtually abandoned in the name of the exploration of other realities and other dimensions, because now we have a scientific grip on that fact that these things are not just theory, that they are actually there.
Right.
We have empirical experiments that can determine that. So,
Joe, could you share some of the details of some of the cases so our listening audience can appreciate the degree of high strangeness involved in these disappearances that Polanyi is addressing in his Missing 411 books?
Right.
Well, one of those things is animal reactions, right? A lot of people, there's been a few people that have written some really good papers in the UFO community over the years, but in large, it gets ignored. But I've trained people and told people for years that expedition and research and investigate these things. You know, animals are great barometers for paranormal activity, because animals, whenever there's something paranormal going on, if there's an animal in the environment, it is not going to behave normally. It's going to be doing something that would cause you to say, well, why is the dog acting funny? You know what I mean?
Right.
Their behaviors are altered. And, you know, people see cats doing this kind of stuff all the time. And I believe that it's because that they are cognizant to this other spectrum. But one of the things is animal behavior. No observation of animals in the area, you know what I mean? Which, when you're conducting a search, that might not be too unfeasible, because you have dozens, if not thousands, of people in the woods. But it is a bit ridiculous. We only see this in Bigfoot and UFO cases. Can't get a dog to follow whatever it is. The dog is not the scent of the victim. The scent is fresh. The victim can't be far. They're only a few hours lost. And the dog looks at the handler and, you know, kind of says, you know what, screw you, I'm taking the day off, I ain't following this. Well, the only time I've ever personally seen this is people with track dogs trying to follow a Bigfoot.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you have a track dog, often 9 times out of 10, that dog is going to get one whiff of that Sasquatch. He's going to look at you like you're insane. And he's going to be, you can beat me, I am not following this. You know? And,
that's true.
So right there is a parallel in the Bigfoot research. It doesn't mean Bigfoot's involved in this. You know what I mean? But it is a parallel that we have to pay attention to, because ultimately what will lead to solutions and understanding this stuff, or even preventing it, is going to be statistical research.
Absolutely, yes.
Again, it's this happens with people just, you know, 50 yards away. It happens with people that are 10 feet away. Imagine we're walking down a trail. I had read this so many times in different paranormal books, it wasn't even funny. But if we're walking down a trail and I'm just 5-10 feet in front of you, and you take your eyes off me just for a second, and then there's just silence, and I'm never seen again. These are the kinds of scenarios that are going on. Not only is the person missing a phenomenon in itself, but what the people in their immediate company observe is very phenomenal. And a lot of people think, oh, you must be mistaken. Well, no, they're not.
No.
I've heard this so many times, it isn't even funny. And now that Pilates is assembling this kind of research, man, it's amazing how often this happens. You know, the inclement weather, generally, very shortly, if not right when a person vanishes, as the search teams are mobilizing, you're usually talking within 1 or 2 hours. Someone gets lost in the woods, especially nowadays because we have cell phones and stuff, we can alert authorities a lot quicker. No one has to hike out most of the time.
Right.
Unless you're in between mountains and can't get a signal. But normally, generally, right as the search is assembling or just after it, massive weather hits. Not just, you know, they all started to rain, but you're talking, you know, very severe storms, so severe that they have to shut the search down completely.
Right.
And if that person's alive and lost out there, they're just going to have to survive it or die. It's that severe. This happens so often in these cases, it is mind-boggling. What in the world? We know that we can technologically control or modify weather to some degree, but it's all experimental, and it's probably doing more damage than anything, you know. But a lot of people in the UFO business are familiar with the HARP program. They've been doing it for years. You know, people know about chemtrails and things like this. But this is that whatever this is, it appears to be able to distinctly, to a T, it has the elements of weather at its fingertips and uses those elements to hinder searches, which
what
offers even
this?
More clues, but I'm not going to discuss those tonight. I got to talk about those with Dave first.
What about the fact that if you're carrying any kind of a weapon and a cell phone, that it usually skips you?
Well, it's not a cell phone. It's a transponder, which is a device that generally high mountaineers carry with them in case they get buried in an avalanche.
Yes.
Rescue parties, basically it's a homing beacon.
Oh, I see.
If you
have that or a weapon, they don't bother you.
So what Pilates is saying right now is if you have a weapon, doesn't matter. They take people with weapons. If you have a transponder, doesn't matter. They take people with transponders. But if you have a weapon and a transponder, he has not seen a case yet where a person has had both of those things on them when they vanished. So that doesn't guarantee anything. It just statistically, it implies that maybe there's something about the combination of these two devices that whatever this force is doesn't want to tangle with it. Just like, why does it bring some kids back? Why does it bring some people back? You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense. The people that aren't brought back,
now,
when they are found, and many of them are never found, but the ones that are found, just like the cat mutilations, the bodies are not complete. There's a huge amount of all their bones missing. What little is left is usually gives you the impression that this person was literally torn asunder. It's as if a person went through a wood chipper. You know, I would really like to get a hold of some of these bone chip samples and take them to some colleagues of mine that have Chuck and I have a volunteer in Colorado Springs that can offer us a chamber for electron microscopic photographs and take a good hard look at the edges of these, find out how this bone became fragmented. Did it break apart under pressure? Was it chipped? Was it bit? Was it cut? Was it smashed? You know what I mean? All of these can be told by the characteristics of the edges of a broken particle. And no matter how small these bone chips are, there must be some kind of signature fingerprint for how that bone ended up chipped. And for right now, one of the things, again, with the Atadero case, one of the things that Pilates discussed in his recent lecture in Bailey was that they found this boy's shoe, they found his tooth, and they found a portion of his skull. But they couldn't tell what removed the portion of his skull because rats and mice had chewed on the edges of it, and that's where you would find that signature. But the thing about it that struck me, do you know what a trepan is?
No.
In biology? Trepan is when you remove a brain from a skull, you take a circular saw, and you go around the top of the skull in a circle around the head, and you pull the skull cap off in one piece, and then you pull the brain out. Anybody that knows anything about autopsies or ever worked in biology or anything, it's...
Yes, I have.
Another things like that have never bothered me. So dealing with corpses, dead bodies, and all this kind of stuff, I deal with it a lot better than a lot of people. A lot of people, things like that really disturb them, but... If you're going to be in these fields of research, then, you know, you need to shake off whatever soft-sensitive psychological area you have. Get rid of it, because you're going to see things, if you're going to really be in the nitty-gritty of this stuff, you're going to see things that aren't pleasant, but they have to be examined. And but the thing that struck me is that the portion of this boy's skull, if you can visualize the skull cap as I just described it in a tray pan,
right,
that portion of the skull, no matter how you break a skull, you can't break just that portion off of it. Not in a perfectly round cap.
Uh-huh.
And that's what that skull fragment reminded me of. It reminded me distinctly of what you would see on an autopsy table on a tray pan.
Oh, my God.
You know, what, did this kid get kidnapped and tray panned? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Could you maybe share one of the strangest cases that you've encountered here? I know there are many, the majority of the ones we're talking about are all very strange, but one of the strangest, could you just share the details of one case so our listeners could get a little flavor of just how weird and strange this is?
Right.
Well, if that isn't strange in itself, you know.
Oh, it's all strange. Yeah, I know that, yeah.
It's not like I'm a scholar in the missing 411 thing, you know what I mean? So all I can tell you is scenarios. If you want distinctive features of case by case kind of stuff, you know, Pilates knows all that off the top of his head because he's, you know, it's one good healthy thing about lecturing is you repeat things so much that it becomes embedded in memory. For over 14 years, I've been lecturing. I think I've used notes one time, and I've never really used PowerPoint. You know, to me, that it should be a requirement. You know, if you can't talk about something for an hour or two, then you really don't know much about it. If you can't talk about it off the top of your head in a factual way, you know, I mean, I could open a book and read a few cases to you, but that would be kind of redundant and mundane in itself. But
what just pops out at you is something that, oh my God, what is this? You know.
All of it.
Oh well,
much of this happens when someone is in perfect close proximity visual sight. And the thing that really gets me is the prominence in which this thing predates on children.
Ooh.
Usually around 2 or 3 years old. It really digs the really young ones. I think so far what I've examined, you know, hopefully in the near future we can assemble a good program for statistic analysis and start gathering, you know, the boring stuff that nobody really wants to do, you know, start gathering facts and numbers.
Uh-huh.
I'm very good with statistics. And
now, is there only one of those things, or is it, like, numerous of them?
Well, it happens worldwide, so I would imagine that they're all over the place. We're just now finding out about them, but they've always been here. I guarantee you they've always been here. You know, I'm not sure if Dave is aware of this, but we had a very massive amount of Native Americans. I think 4,000 years ago, there was a migration of Native American tribes from New Mexico up the San Grias Range to the San Luis Valley Desert. And they were taking the San Grias Range to get there, which is now closed off to the public, pretty much. But it has a long history of people, hundreds, thousands, even dozens of years ago, vanishing out of that area. I think that's one of the reasons why people aren't allowed back there anymore. It's a beautiful mountain, you know. The San Grias de Cristos, by the way, means blood of Christ.
Uh-huh.
So how it got that name, I have no idea. A really odd name to name a mountain, but either way, thousands of years ago, if you talk to any of the elders around Colorado, southern Colorado, and surrounding the San Luis Valley area, you know, cattle mutilation and UFO capital of the world, it's one of, they'll tell you that they can't really tell you much about the place, and the reason they can't tell you much about the place is because they never occupied it.
Right.
And they've never occupied it because of this incident where something I may be wrong, it's been a long time since I've looked at the data, but I believe there were over 700 natives vanished on that mountain. All the tribes in the region got together, searched high and low for them, never found a trace.
Ooh.
And this was around 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, and they unanimously decided whatever's going on out here ain't our business, and we should probably just stay away from here.
Right.
And there's a lot of locations like that. The Gorman Ranch in Utah, the Uinta Basin is very much like, if you talk to the Hopis, if you talk to the Navajo, they'll tell you, oh, we haven't been on that area in over 4,000 years. You know, for the same reason. Weird stuff goes on in there, and it ain't none of my business.
Basically.
Give
us an idea of numbers of people who have vanished in this mysterious way that are not in the possible category of conventional explanation. What numbers are we looking at?
I think, and again, don't quote me on this, but I believe that there are well over 1,000 people that we can squarely determine have vanished in this manner just in state parks. Now, this is not accounting for anybody that disappears in the air, which happens quite frequently, anybody that disappears on water, which happens quite frequently, or anybody that disappears in the urban environment, which, of course, nobody wants to study the urban environment because there is so much crime that has to be ruled out. You know
right.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I was listening to Pilates and meeting with him a few weeks ago has piqued my curiosity and my interest so much I started conducting some other research and just started gathering a little bit of just surface data. And I'm already starting to discover that there are cases in major cities where people literally, I was looking at one case the other day, the woman gets off work, drives her friend home, drops her off. She drives home, parks the car in the driveway, walks in the front door, sets her keys and her purse on the table, and that's it.
That's it? Never heard from again.
No one has ever seen, or there are no clues, there are no leads, there is nothing.
Oh.
And she arrived at home in broad daylight in the middle of the afternoon. And it just makes me wonder, how often does this happen, and how might it fit into the grand scheme of, well, it's clear and obvious that there is something in our world that has been preying on the life forms here as old as time. You know, Charles Fort has documented a case in Northern Ireland where 228 sheep they had their throats torn out, their spleens missing, and their skulls crushed. And all that was found, nothing was heard or seen, all that was found was giant cat-like footprints. Well, if you're into the Phantom Panther thing, you know what I mean? One of the characteristics of Phantom Panthers and Bigfoot is to kill things without feeding on them. No natural animal does this. If an animal has to kill another animal, it's because it's going to eat it.
Right.
And they're not going to kill 228 sheep and then just leave them all there and just take the spleens. No, this is something harvesting spleens for some reason. It's very common in mutilation. It's one of the primary things that are taken from cows and such. Doesn't make any sense. John Keel once said, just think about it, somewhere out there in the vastness of our unknown universe, somebody's got this massive collection of cow anuses.
Right.
So that's what they take from cows. They got to go somewhere, right? Somebody has got these things. We don't know what they use them for. It could be something completely ignorant. We do things like that all the time.
Well, you told me last week that there were 13,000 people that disappeared. Was it last year in Colorado?
The last time I ran a census with the FBI was 2014. And that was probably the last time I addressed it in a lecture. I was at the San Luis Valley lecture, and I brought this up, but I used to bring it up often. And
how
it's
many?
Just no response.
How many 13, was it?
13,000 people, 1 year. 13,000 citizens vanished from the state of Colorado without a trace, without any sign of criminal involvement.
13,000.
That's too much.
Did you say 13?
As that standard, you're talking over 660,000 people a year. If you go onto the FBI's website, they state themselves over 2,000 children in this country alone disappear every day. And why is not the media talking about this? Why is not the public warned? That's one of David Pilates' questions about this 411 research in the national parks. That's the most infuriating thing. We know they know. If they if they didn't know, they wouldn't be hindering research, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to prevent trying to prevent people like Pilates from learning more about this. When they warning the public.
How does Pilates gather his data? I'm just curious about that.
Well, there's a whole number of sources you can go by, you know what I mean? If you have any investigative training at all, you know, go to the official sources first. Go to those offices that handled it. So if Sheriff's Department is part of a search, go to them and say, hey, what records do you have on this? 9 times out of 10, they'll just give it to you. You know?
Yeah.
Same thing with the Parks Department. The Parks Department claims they don't keep records of this, which is insane. Of course they do. That's bull. You'd have to be some kind of a knucklehead to believe that one, you know. But this is my gripe against the government these days in my own personal life. I would tell young people back in my day, at least they had the dignity to lie to us, you know
right.
what I mean, and cover
yeah.
things up. Now, it's they commit illegal acts, and they know it's illegal, and they know the public knows about it, and they just don't care. That's a bad sign that our government is going the wrong direction and that our government is a detriment to its own people.
It's
you know,
not run by humans.
To know about something like this and do nothing to study it, do nothing to enlighten the public or warn the public, you know, is just appalling. You know, the last time we saw something like this was in the 30s, the late 20s
well,
and
know,
the early 30s.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that was pedophile.
Stalin, yeah.
1,000 psychopaths. And, you know, and that's another thing. If the government says it isn't happening, chances are it is. Back in the late 1920s, 1910s, the government emphatically dispelled rumors about deranged homicidal lunatic, what we now call a serial killer or a psychopath.
Right.
They lied to the public about that. Well, at the end of World War I, we had a whole wave of them because they were shell-shocked people. That's part of what makes a person like that. You know, they lied about that. Then in the 30s and 40s, they lied about organized crime. Oh, there's no such thing as organized bullshit, there ain't. That's a complete lie. We can look back and see that every time a major event that impacts society as a whole is going on, their first response is to deny it.
Right,
people
exactly.
People start seeing UFOs. You're not seeing nothing. People start seeing Bigfoot. You're crazy. This is how they respond. They will never give us the truth. People gripe about the state of the government right now, but the sad fact is it has been this way a long, long time.
Uh-huh.
This American society has just waited too long to do anything about it and realize we got the wrong people in control.
They're
you
not
know?
People. That's what's wrong.
Well, On one level, yeah, it's sociopathic. I mean, that's the mark of a sociopath is
right.
a complete lack of compassion and empathy.
Right,
you know?
Anything human, yes.
And if you get into the far end, which, you know, it's like a double-edged sword, you know, I can't recommend it for some people, but for other people I would recommend it. But if you have any mental instability at all, you should avoid David Icke's research. Don't even look at it. Because your brain is not designed to handle it. But even if you have a stable mind, it's hard to handle because all the facts are there. There's something going on here that is so unbelievable that, you know, to me, I mean, I'm just completely floored, you know. Right now I'm looking at a whole host of Nazi stuff, Nazi UFO stuff.
Uh-huh.
And that I've never seen before because I obtained Colonel Wendell Stevens' archive, or a large portion of it. But if I didn't know any better, man, I'd swear the Nazis survived, and they're quietly taking over the world now.
That's exactly what's happening.
Because when you look at the motives, the behavioral patterns, the psychologies, and the attitudes of not just the United States politicians and leaders, but across the world, when you look at, that's like looking at something like the Roman Catholic Vatican, right?
Uh-huh.
One looks at that, the common citizen looks at this and says, what? It's a religious institution. They work all around the world doing good for people. No, they don't. This is a demonic institution. These people are Satanists, they're devil worshippers, and they're demonologists. If you know anything about occult practice, you would see that this rampant pedophilia that's going on, the fact that the church has hid it, covered it up, protected these people, and relocated them so they could keep doing what they're doing, directly implies that. But just several weeks ago in Ireland, there used to be an orphanage, right? And there used to be close by, there was an unwed mother's home. So the church promotes in the public that people that are born out of wedlock, that's just a terrible sin, you know what I mean, have sex or get pregnant before you're married. So if a woman became pregnant in the 1930s, because of the church, society would ostracize them. You couldn't get a job. Everybody spit on you. So
right.
So the church has created a social problem and rendered certain people in certain classes helpless. Right? So now you have a bunch of unwed mothers that cannot support themselves because society's turned their back on them. What does the church do? It opens a care home. Give these women a place to go. We will adopt your babies out to good homes. We'll take care of you and get you back on your feet, but you have to agree to become our servant. What was really happening, as they recently discovered in Ireland, David Icke was right. He's been saying this stuff for years, and people just ignore it. The building is long gone. There's a concrete slab that exists where the building was, and below the slab is a massive septic tank. And what did they find in the septic tank? Over 800 babies. And all of these babies were killed and butchered in a very ritualistic way.
Wow.
And babies that just died and got chucked into a septic tank. Again, we're talking 800 children. This opened a massive investigation against the church, and there were homes like this by the hundreds all across Ireland, just like there were orphanages by the hundreds all across Ireland under the Catholic Church. And as soon as they start investigating this, they discover there's a nearby orphanage. And that orphanage took over 2,000 children and took money from chemical and pharmaceutical labs in exchange for allowing them to conduct illegal medical and laboratory experiments on these children.
Yeah.
So under the guise of goodwill, you see the most evil acts are occurring. Nothing in this world is what it appears to be.
No.
And people are somewhat in a state of denial. Most people in society exist in a reality they create, and they believe that their belief systems and their psychology is an allowed reality. It is not. You know, you can ignore things like this all you want. It doesn't change a damn thing. You know, here in the United States for hundreds of years, things like rape and pedophilia it's a socially uncomfortable thing to talk about. It's, you know, humans at their lowest level. You know what I mean? No one wants to address it. And what that did was that created a society that punished the victims. If you were a woman in 1928 and you got raped, your best option is not to tell anybody. Because you will be spit on. You will be treated like dirt, as if you did something wrong. Well, what does that do? What's the side effect of that? The side effect is a generation of rapists and pedophiles that know that they can do whatever the hell they want. Nobody's even going to say anything.
Ooh.
It wasn't until society started to address these problems that change occurs. You know, and situations... Yes.
We only got about 5 or 6 minutes. I want to ask this question. I know in some of these cases where people just vanish under mysterious circumstances and then later were found, some of them were alive. And what kind of stories did they tell?
Well, that's just it. A lot of them can't tell any stories. You know, if they're children, they may have a disability. They may be too young, like 2- and 3-year-olds. You know, they're not going to be able to tell you much of anything. I think most of the adults that are found intact are either traumatized to the point to where, you know, you, if a person just doesn't come outright and say something, you know, you probably shouldn't bother them with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not psychologically healthy or ethical in investigation and in research. And that's another thing I really, really appreciate about Pilates. Too rarely do you see any ethical level of integrity in these fields, and this guy is right up there, man. He's right where everybody should be, you know what I mean? But everybody isn't. Well, a lot of these people are somewhat disoriented, you know what I mean? They don't know where they're at. They don't know what's going on. They don't know how they got there. They're just standing on a trail. Half their clothes are missing, and they're just dumbfounded. So they can't tell you anything. You know, some people have been found asleep. So when searchers wake them up, they, sometimes they don't even know they were missing. So whatever's going on, there's, just like with UFO abduction, there is some type of mental block, whether it's a natural mechanism like with trauma or whether something is done to them. One question a guy at David's talk in Bailey was a very good question was, you know, has there been any, well, he didn't say it in so many words, but what he meant to say was, has there been any toxicology or physiological panels drawn from the people that come back? And unfortunately, no. When someone comes back, generally everybody's just happy to have them back, and they just don't want to talk about it anymore. They're just glad to have the person back. Let's all just go home. You know what I mean?
And yeah.
To a regular person, to most of the search and rescue, the parks people, the victims' families, things like this, they wouldn't even in a million years even think about, you know, well, draw some blood and let's do a physiology panel. You know what I mean? To find out if there has been any foreign substance, like a drug, that has been put into them to subdue them. You know, one thing that's very curious about the cat mutilations is at the base of the skull on several necropsies I've seen, there are two very tiny puncture marks through the skull at the base of the skull as if something was injected into the animal. Probably because whatever is normally used to subdue doesn't work on them. But there's something about a cat's brain that can offer clues at how we can prevent it from working with our brains.
Ooh.
It could have, ultimately, it could lead to protecting yourself from these things, from abduction and things like that. We just don't know, and there's not enough people working in it.
What's wrong with
Joe,
the people that want to keep doing this? I mean, visiting parks. Why do people keep wanting to visit these parks?
I mean, it's statistically it's slim. Strikingly enough, you know, thousands of people die every day in car wrecks. Good drivers too. You know, you don't have to pay attention to half of what you're doing as much as you do as to what everybody else is doing. I know personally, if I died in a car wreck, it would definitely be some other jackass's fault. You know what I mean? Somebody that was just somebody that blindsided me that I didn't see him coming. You know what I mean? But people die on the roadways every day. You know, it doesn't stop anybody from driving cars. You know, statistically, it doesn't necessarily mean if you go into a park that this could happen to you or would happen to you, it means that you just need to be aware that these possibilities are there. Maybe people will, as the public gets more and more familiar, they'll start to be more and more cognizant of their surroundings and may be able to detect clues that can help. It could prove
to be
important.
Well, Joe, we're out of time. Just a bit. The dark shadows are gathering on us here. And gosh, it's been intriguing as all get out, and thoroughly enjoyed the show tonight. I hope we had listeners are paying close attention when they think about planning a camping trip to one of the national parks. We'll take all the precautions possible. Thanks again for being on tonight. We'll have you back again soon now.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. You've been listening to Night Search. It's outrageous information, but it's all true, folks. Good night.